everybody. Welcome to the Orange Kids podcast, where we take the big ideas of kids ministry and we discuss practical solutions to our week-to-week challenges. My name is Mike, and I'm thrilled to have you on the podcast today. Thanks for listening. And joining me, as always, are my co-host and friends. I've got Kellen.
Hey.
Hey.
I'm really excited for this one.
It sounded exciting. Thank you so much for that.
Hey.
Hey, guys.
And we have Gina McLean as well.
Hey.
Hello, Gina.
That I don't sound as excited, do I?
Yeah, I was like, hey. And it was like, hey.
Hey.
And I was like, we're going to have to work on this, friends.
Kellen. Kellen sets the bar too high with a hello. So.
Well, today that was not the case. So just saying. So, all right. Well, we are excited that you are listening to this podcast, and we are excited to talk to some friends today. Brad and Brian Sitton are joining us today. Brad and Brian, how are you guys doing? Give us a better introduction than Gina and Kellen did.
Wahoo! We're doing good. Oh my God!
See,
that was better. Oh my goodness.
See, now that guys is how that's how you do that. So, anyways, Brad and Brian Sitton, they are here joining us today on the Orange Kids podcast as we are going to be talking about fun. And the reason why we wanted to have them on the podcast today to talk about fun specifically is because they have a site where they create games for people to have fun. It's called Crowd Control. Controlgames.com. It's an amazing site. All sorts of stuff on there that you can get. So we encourage you to check that out. But Brad and Brian, outside of Crowd Control Games and having a lot of fun, tell us, just take a minute, tell us a little bit about yourself. So Brad, we'll start with you.
All right. Well, my name's Brad. My background is I've been doing like video content creation for events and experiences for about, you know, a long time. And so over the last couple of years, Brian and I started making interactive crowd games kind of for fun. And then just kind of evolved into, we started doing them for more events and then just led into one thing or another. So we kind of grew up in the church and helping out, you know, in youth ministry and stuff. And just the games were just something we naturally kind of fell into. And so as I got older, I didn't know you could make a living out of that. So I started doing video stuff, and that was my life for quite some time. But I've worked for different agencies, different ministries, but I now work for myself. And we make games together. So I'm here in Atlanta, Georgia, married with three kids, and Brian's got way more kids than me.
Wow.
Yeah.
Brian's beating you.
I live in Joplin, Missouri. I have six kids.
Whoa.
Wow. That's a houseful.
Yeah. I know, right? I got one. I
go first. If you can see you.
He's just like a hobby. My oldest
hobby.
Is married. Right? It's just three. What's three? And then my youngest is, my youngest is just turned 15 a couple days ago. So I get to purchase my last car for all these six kids. So I'm thrilled to get through that phase of life. Currently, I've got a kind of an interesting background. I've had background in software design, transportation logistics. I was a children's minister for about 5 years at College Heights in Joplin. I work with Christ and Youth, and I do interactive experiences with those guys. Just lots of times where ever I can to have fun, I'm like, hey, if you love Jesus and you like to have fun, I want to be there. So I just look for people like that and try to work with them. So Brad and I have been doing this for like, 15 years now probably, and just have a blast and just love the feedback we're getting from the community and different folks just going, man, thanks for helping our ministry be more fun. And so, excited to talk about this today.
That's awesome. Well, we want to jump into this idea of fun. And sometimes I would say in kids ministry, you guys, Kellen, Gina, correct me if I'm wrong, but like sometimes fun can be looked at as a, hey, we're not here to have fun.
Right.
Fun is what you do outside of the church. When you come into here, we're going to learn about Jesus. We're here. We got some serious stuff to talk about here.
And the two cannot meet.
They cannot meet. They cannot hang out, and they definitely cannot have fun together.
Which is mind-blowing because we're working with kids.
Right.
But yes, that sometimes is the...
So I would love for you guys to jump into this idea and talk about this. Why is fun important for kids to have in general?
Oh, yeah. And I think it's interesting. I hear a lot of people say, man, the goal isn't to have fun. And that's true. Like if your goal is just to have just fun, that might not be right because our goal is to talk about Jesus and share the gospel and mentor these kids and disciple these kids. But fun can be a huge, incredibly useful tool in that process. So we think fun, one, is going to just make their time at church or wherever you are enjoyable, right? I want them to, you know, if you ask a kid, hey, how was your day at school? 9 times out of 10, they're going to go, oh, man, they're going to tell you about recess. Oh, I had so much fun playing today. I had so much fun today doing this. So just giving that overall feeling of, man, I just have good vibes about this place. That's one thing. The second one is, building relationships is key. So if you're in a small group and you're trying to, you know, talk to these kids about a subject, if they're not connected with you, it's really challenging. You guys have all probably been there, right? You're just trying to, you know, herd cats almost.
Yeah.
If you can start that relationship as soon as those kids walk in the door, I always used to tell my volunteers, small group begins when those kids walk in, you greet them with a smile, you get down on their level, say hi, welcome them. And then when we start to play those games, play with them to become teammates, to become partners, to become mentors. I mean, you can help them win, help them play. And that relationship is just going to increase the value of the rest of your time together.
So true. It's easy as a volunteer to assume that the game that's provided is there to pacify, you know?
Right.
But instead, it's there to engage.
Yeah, it's a lot of times, it's almost like if you think of kids love the playground at school, right? And if you'll notice, most teachers don't go out onto the playground to play foursquare kickball with the kids, right?
Yep.
And for some reason, I think our volunteers are like, oh, we're in teacher mode, so we don't go to the playground. And I think, yeah, Brad and I were just talking about this the other day. It's just like, we don't want our volunteers to be like teachers as much as like mentors, older brothers, older friends who are really walking with them in this journey, not just We don't just want to lecture them. We want to walk with them and make this a conversation.
Yeah, and it's like when you are on the playground, and that's where, like, when one kid starts the game and he's having fun and he loves that game, the other kids will join in. And then the kids become having fun. And I think that's what we want to do with when you're having game time. And we can get into the mechanics of how to host well and all that kind of stuff. But at the end of the thing, it's you have fun because it shows that you're passionate about it, but that draws people in. And I think you just said the word engagement. I think that's key right there. Is this whole the point a lot of times is you want to engage your crowd, because if they're out focused somewhere else, you want to get the focus into something purposeful. Well, games help you do that. I mean, for one, if you look at like the brain chemistry, you've got like as soon as you start having fun, it starts triggering dopamine. Well, dopamine is, you know, it makes you feel good, but also it's one of the key chemicals in your brain that helps you remember things. So having a lot of fun actually hardwires you to remember what you're about to do.
That's really why, if
you have a fun experience, if you go to Disney World, you remember the fun stuff because there's more dopamine and it hardwires you to remember that. So if you want your students to really learn something, you want to hardwire their brain. You want to pre-pump their brain full of dopamine so they remember everything you're about to happen. And if you see them not, if they're not learning, then they're not having enough fun. You just got to dial it up.
Yeah, that's so compelling. You know, because sometimes the fun factors can be something that feels like it's a time waster. You know, when you have got limited time and you've got to cut something in order to make sure that you land on time or end on time, that the fun factor tends to be the thing that goes the first or is reduced, right?
Or I like what you guys were saying about the dopamine and that's released. They can remember a lot more. I feel like sometimes as leaders or as volunteers, we sometimes don't want to do the games because after they play games, what happens? The kids are too excitable and they're wild and they're crazy. And so I think we sometimes lean away from that because we don't want to deal with that now third grader that is all wired up and excitable. But I think, and I know we're going to hit this point, but I think leading and hosting it well and how to transition is something that's really important when dealing with games and kids.
That's going to be helpful because I think there are a lot of adults that don't know how to have fun again.
Yeah.
You know, they don't know how to laugh.
And that creates a culture of the games aren't fun. Or if you host them in a certain way, or if your games are boring after a while, they're like, oh, well, game time is dumb because the games aren't any fun.
Yeah. Right.
But if you put work into it and they're looking forward to it, when my kids were younger, I used to take them to this thing every Wednesday night. They played the exact same game every Wednesday night for 3 years. Mm-hmm. And the kids loved it every single time because they put so much energy into making this one game super, super fun. And the culture was, this game is awesome. You're going to love it. And that's a very different culture from, well, game time is a waste. Game time is a little bit extra. If the hosts run into it, then it's that culture of what do you want your culture to be? And if you can create a culture of fun, then all of a sudden that's the expectation, not just the goal, but you know they're expecting fun. And if they're expected to be fun, it most likely will lead them to having more fun.
Right.
And so that's a much better way to kind of set the stage before you start.
Yeah, I've also heard the argument of, oh, we don't want to have winners and losers because, you know, we don't want to have some kid crush and stuff.
Oh my gosh.
And I think there's some validity to that. However, boy, if you can help kids cope with winning, how to win well, you know, surrounded by, and how to lose well. The consequences to losing a game on a Sunday morning are very minimal. The kids will feel it, however. But if loving adults can circle around and say, hey, here's how to properly deal with these emotions you're seeing right now. When you lose like this, it is tough. Let's practice dealing with those emotions now. So when you're at school and something really heavy happens, you've already got the practice on how to deal with loss.
That's so good.
And I just think it's super important for us to kind of say, hey, man, winning and losing is a real part of life. And let's do that. Let's simulate that surrounded by Christian adults who love you and can kind of mentor you and teach you and help you work through that.
That's really powerful.
I just saw a stat the other day, and it was talking about the rise of mental health and or the decline of mental health in America. And it was that they can trace it all back to a certain date in 2007. And they said all mental health, all these different studies are all pointing back to this one day. And what they're saying is it was the day that the iPhone was released. And so all these people were like, you know, there's a direct correlation to the iPhone, the release of the iPhone and the increase or the uptick in mental health in students. And so, but then someone else took a bigger step back and they said, no, it's actually the decline has been going on more. That accentuated it. But the real loss is mental health has increased as the decline of the playground or as the playground has declined. And so as less kids are playing together, mental health is going way in a very bad direction because they're not learning how to deal with loss, right? Learning how to deal with each other. Because on the playground, when you play together, you get in fights and then you break up and you're still friends at the end of recess or the next day you're going to play it again. And so there's something about the playground where kids learn how to cope with each other. They learn how to deal with each other. They learn how to have better social skills. But we're slowly just removing these skills and replacing them with, you know, let's be more calm, let's be more still, and let's not let them be who they really are. And so the loss of the playground is affecting that. So if it's already happened at the schools, why in the world would we do it at our churches as well? I mean, if anything, we need to have more playground time, more fun time, more game time, so these kids can interact and really learn how to be better people. And I think that's a huge part of what we can do to really, because honestly, I work with high school ministries right now. And the increase in mental health is a huge problem. And that's one of the best things. I mean, yes, they need to know Jesus, but these kids are killing themselves. And if they can learn how to deal better with that when they're in grade school, that's going to make their high school so much better.
Yeah,
I took that heavy, didn't I? That went really heavy.
Yeah. Yeah. It's great.
Let's make it fun. Come on, Brad. Yeah.
That's right.
We have this tendency, you know, in our kids ministry environments to want, I mean, the reason why we've taken away the competition element, why people have justified removing the competition element is out of protection for the kids. They feel like it's too emotionally difficult. And yet at the same time, when we take what you just shared into consideration, by bringing that competition element back in appropriately, you know, in an appropriate way.
Absolutely.
By reintroducing that, you're giving them a place where they can lose and the stakes are so low.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But like you said, it's so well said, they can learn how to work through it, how to work through those emotions.
If anyone takes anything out of this podcast, it's we don't need to protect this next generation. We need to prepare the next generation.
Yeah, that's
good. And it's our overprotection that is killing these kids. And it's not preparing them for what they really need.
That's so good.
You can fix that game.
Game time, man.
No, that's so good. I think, you know, I love the points that you've made as far as we want to create a culture of fun. We want our ministries to be a place where kids want to be a part of. And if you don't have that element of fun in there, it's going to be really difficult. But not just having fun for fun's sake, it's not the goal. But when you look at the statistics of fun and how it relates to kids and all the things that you said about recess, mentally, as far as remembering things, as far as a connection with kids, all that points back to fun. And if you're not convinced that fun needs to be an important element of your ministry, you can even go back to scripture, right? Mm-hmm. When you look at all the scripture that is there about fun, about rejoicing in the Lord always, may the righteous be glad, a cheerful heart brings good medicine, the fruit of the Spirit, one of the fruits of the Spirit is
joy
and to have that fun. So, so good. So let's turn the corner, because you got me convinced. I'm convinced. Yeah. Nobody else may be convinced, but I'm convinced. And let's talk about practically about what fun can look like. Because you mentioned earlier about, you know, if you're leading a game or if you're hosting and you don't believe in fun, or maybe it's hard for you to have fun, or you're not quite sure how to lead that properly. Like, what are some, let's talk about hosting, right? Let's just talk about that.
Yeah.
As far as hosting games and doing that things, what are some practical things and tips and suggestions you guys would give to help leaders?
Yeah. One thing is, I always tell our hosts, man, you got to believe in the game. Right. If you go up there and you're like, oh, this might be fun. I don't know. We'll try it. You know, that's usually going to lead towards the crowd kind of, you're leading the crowd. And so if the crowd is just like, oh, maybe this isn't a good game, you know, so the host first off needs to believe in the game. So they go up there and like, oh my gosh, you guys ready for a fun game? This is going to be fantastic. So that's step number one is believe in the game. And Brad, I thought we'd just go back and forth, right? See how I did that? I set you up.
Okay.
I set you up there and you...
Hey, that's a great segue, Brent. You know what that reminds me of? Is I think we should have three simple rules.
Yeah.
No, I think that one of the things that happens a lot of times is how we set up a game. And a lot of times this is like... actually, I've talked to Kellen about this a lot. Kellen, I don't know if you guys watch him host. He's a fantastic host. Good job, Kellen. You're amazing. But whenever you're hosting a game, the first thing you want to do is kind of set the premise. What's the premise of this game? What kind of game is this going to be? So if it's going to be this a runaround game, it's a tag game, it just lets everyone know this is the kind of game we're about to play.
What zip code?
Then, what zip code are we in? How do you play? What kind of game is this? Hey, this is a trivia game. Whatever it is, that gets them the idea of where they're going to be. Then once they kind of know where they're going to be, tell them right off the bat, how do you win this game? Okay, all you've got to do is answer these questions and you'll be the winner. That's all you gotta do. Just tell them how to win because they want to know, okay, I want to win. They want to win. So let them know right off the bat, how do you win? Then once you've got them in, once you kind of explain the basics, once they know how to win, then you can start with the rules. Then say, okay, now all you got to do is answer these three questions, but you have to do it while blindfolded, standing on one leg. So then you start putting the obstacles in the way. And then they're like, okay, I already know how to win, but the obstacles are in the way. I got that. And then you start giving them tips. Now, what I would do if I was you, and that's where the host role is. Your goal as a host is that you want these people to win.
Yep.
And a lot of times I see it with hosts all the time is, if the crowd turns on them and all of a sudden it's like they're not enjoying the game, and then the host will start kind of dictating to them and tell them, no, you have to be happier. You have to enjoy this more. Get excited, get loud. And they're dictating what to do and not really helping them to win.
Yeah.
Because if the host is really trying to just get them to win, then they're going to have more fun. So just to kind of wrap that up, you got like, you want to do the premise, explain the basics of what the game is, then give them, how do I win? Tell them how to win and then give them the rules. Most people will jump right into the rules and say, hey, don't do this, don't do this, don't do this. And oh, yeah, if you cross this line, then you win.
Yeah.
So to put them in the right order is very, very helpful.
Yeah, there's also this idea of breadcrumbing instructions. Some people will get up there and say, hey, guys, we're going to play this fun game. And here's the 27 steps to play it, right? And they just sit there and they just lecture the 27. And the kids are just staring off into space. I always tell people, hey, if I'm going over to a friend's house, I'm going to learn a new card game. I don't say, tell me all the rules. I say, hey, just you guys start playing, and I'll just watch and I'll figure it out, right? So I think lots of people just like to watch. So this breadcrumbing idea is only tell them as much information as they need to just get to that next step. So in the same way you can kind of go through the premise and the rules and the tips, do that pretty as quickly and succinctly as possible and do it just on an as-needed basis. So it's like, hey guys, we're going to play this game. It's going to be this fun runaround game. I need two volunteers. Hey guys, come on up here. And then those two volunteers come up here. And then you tell those two volunteers just what they need to get to the next thing. Hey, for the next thing, you're going to get some trivia questions. All right, so here's what you're going to do. And you get them all set up, and then, oh, by the way, you got to wear this blindfold. Hey, now, what I would recommend doing is, and you just kind of make it very conversational. Don't make it a lecture, because kids just get turned off by lecture, right? The more conversational you can make it, the better. And also, one of the things when you're kind of setting up these hosting is it's really good to have, you know, clear teams, like, who am I cheering for? Who am I cheering? Not to say I'm cheering against them, but if I have two people up on stage, everyone in the audience wants to cheer for somebody. So it's really good to, like, maybe... You know, hey, left side of the room, hey, you guys are all going to be cheering for Scott up here. Let's cheer for Scott. Yay. And over right side of the room, you're all cheering for Jennifer. Come on, Jennifer. Woo. And so really it's the idea of the host's job is to make sure everyone understands the goal that we're trying to get to, how to win this, and who am I cheering for? Because a lot of children like to watch the games just as much as they like to play it.
Yeah.
So make sure you're kind of facilitating that journey for them. Kind of let them know. And let them know, like, oh my God, if you can, I think sometimes we forget as a host, we forget that these kids may not pick up on the subtleties of strategy and the subtleties of what's going on in the game. So if you can help, like, really draw out the tension in the room, like, oh my gosh, Julie only needs three more of these and she wins the whole thing. Did you guys know she only needs three more to go? And you're really just play by play explaining the tension, the strategy, and helping the kids kind of maximize that joyful journey of the exhilaration of about to win, or all the big agony of defeat, or whatever it is. But the host really needs to kind of help facilitate that and help the kids know what's going on.
Yeah. Honestly, I think you guys hit a lot of good points. Like you said earlier, I do host and I am able to do large group games or whatnot. I think the two things that you guys pointed out, so if the listener is listening, I think hosting is really important. The idea of managing the crowd, managing what's happening out in the audience, instead of dictating, hey, crowd, do this. I love that you guys said, point them more towards, hey, guys on stage, girls on stage, this is how you should win the game. Because if the game is moving forward, you naturally get a response. And one thought that I had for any listener listening, if you're like, man, I don't have that outgoing energy, I'm not that upfront person. I think these are really good tips, these three things that you guys gave. What's the premise, what's the win, and what are the rules? I think if a person that can lead younger people, like high school students or middle school students, whoever you have in these kids' ministries, if you teach them these three things, you don't have to be an upfront person. You can get the upfront people on stage doing their thing. And I thought that was great.
Because essentially one of the big parts of this is crowd engagement, right? We want to engage the crowd. Yeah. And so one thing, like when Brian's talking about splitting the room, you know, that brings competition. And what you're saying, Kellen, is that we don't want to force them to get excited. We want to engage them in a way where they get excited on their own. So some tricks to that is like, you know, splitting the room, that's competition. Competition drives engagement. Another thing is timers. Timers add tension. Tension drives engagement.
Timers are the best.
Timers are the best, right? I mean, it's such an easy way. If you're like saying, you line kids up, okay, first one to win a water bottle flip, you know, is going to win. And when they're competing against each other, competition does it. Or you have one person up there and say, you've got 10 seconds to land a water bottle flip. And all of a sudden, that timer, if they were doing it by themselves with no timer, it's kind of boring. But as soon as there's that timer, you guys peeking in there, then all of a sudden it's like, whoa, I got to do it now. So competition and timers, and then a scoreboard at some point, a way to keep track. Those three things are huge for crowd engagement. And that's really going to help the host a lot. If the game is set up in a way that's going to drive engagement, the host doesn't have to work so hard. Yeah. It makes it a whole lot easier for them.
The simple thing on school boards is it kind of helps the kids know, are we about to win? Where are we at in this whole? What's the progress of this? It's like, have you ever been watching a video and you got that little timeline across the bottom and you're checking like, is this almost over? Where are we at in this whole thing?
Yeah.
And scoreboards really help you do that.
One thing, if you don't have like, because I think scoreboard, big scale, you have a screen. Small scale, go to Walmart, buy a $2 whiteboard and have two kids hold the whiteboard, and now you have more participants in the game.
And with the scoreboard, the scoreboard introduces an additional tension for when that countdown's going, that time's going away. Focus more on the crowd response is going to be on the rise.
And I'd say when we say school board, it's really any way that you're kind of keeping track. So that could even be, you know, like if you're playing tag, it's kids still standing. You know, it's, you know, there's lots of different ways to have a school board so the kids see in any game as you're designing it. Make sure you're adding tension by, you know, making sure everyone knows the progress of where we are in this. Are we about to win?
So good.
So I've got a question. I think one of the challenges that I run into is if we don't practice and rehearse that host part, especially the introduction, right? The assumption is, oh, okay, I got it. I know what the premise is. I can tell you what the goal, what the win is. I can tell you the guidelines. But if they're not prepared to get up there and do that concisely, how much time would you say this is an appropriate amount of time for a host to do all of the, hit all of those three notes before they actually hit the game?
So like prep time?
Yeah. I mean, when you're talking to the crowd, you can spend a lot of time on those three points and lose your audience in the process.
Yes. Yeah. Each game is going to be a little bit different based upon, you know, the complexity of the game, right? But Brad and I have had lots of games, great games go terribly bad because a host does kind of two things along this thing. One is they get up there and they start lecturing, like even in a podcast, right? If I just sit here and just monologue forever, you guys are like, all right, we get it, Brian, let's move on.
Right.
There's definitely that idea of literally, if you can say it in one sentence, say it in one sentence and be done with it. This is not a matter of, because the kids are this generation wants to watch more than listen. Does that make sense? I mean, so I'd say, you know, I want to make sure I understand the question. Is the question like, how much time do we spend preparing to make sure I'm ready to host well, or how much time do I actually spend in the hosting before we get into the game side?
The latter.
Okay. So I'd say I would almost, the breadcrumbing strategy is almost like I'm going to be doing the instructions as we're playing. Does that make sense, right? Have you ever seen there's this great video on the explanation of why Mario Brothers video game worked out so well. It's because you didn't have to read any instructions. You literally, the game starts and you walk backwards, you can't do it. You walk forward and you go, oh, there's progress. I hit a button. Oh, I jump.
Yep.
And literally you learn how to play the game in the first 5 seconds just by experimentation almost. And then you just slowly learn the game as you're going. So anytime you can learn the game as you're playing, so I'd say, hey guys, you know, let's set it up. Hey guys, we're going to be playing the game. We're just going to be running around with the, you know, with socks on our heads. You know, not even that's a game. It might be a game. It is.
We should make that, Brian. Let's write that down.
So, you know, we're going to be doing that, right? Hey, I need three volunteers. Hey, these three volunteers come up. And literally you're hosting it as you're kind of walking them through it. So you're literally, if you're spending, you know, if you've got, you know, 10 minutes for game time, if you're spending more than two of that, or heck, if you're spending more than one of that just lecturing and just talking about the game, you're losing them, right? You really want to maximize your time. Because like you said, play is the goal, not them learning a new game. It's just, let's get them playing as quick as possible. We want them to win. And hey, if it's, I was in really like, if they're not playing the game perfect, you know, let them, you know, that's okay. Like out on the playground, not every game of Foursquare was exactly by the rules. And sometimes we made up a brand new game. It was great. So, but I will counter that by saying, we've also seen hosts who have, you know, you've talked to your different people, you've got all your props and everything ready. And sometimes as they're walking up on the stage, they have this brilliant epiphany. You know what makes this game even better? And they change the rules on the fly without practicing, without telling anyone else. And they're like, oh, this will be better. And sometimes that can completely bomb a game. So I would say, you know, if you've got a tested game, you've practiced it, you've rehearsed it, get up there and just change it the last minute. That can really be challenging for everyone involved. We've seen some nightmares.
And it just, and to kind of simplify that a little bit, whenever we work with like corporate shows, we do a lot of like games for like cruise lines and stuff. And on the difference between like corporate ministry, honestly, is prep time. If you work for a corporate event, they'll spend tons of time on the hosting, writing scripts. They'll literally spend an entire hour or two hosting and running through and writing a script for a 2 minute piece. And that's the difference between corporate and ministry is time. And so when we work with cruise ships, they will work on the script for the host, like the intro. And we try to get it down to less than two lines. If you say more than two lines to intro the game or explain it, it's too long. And so it's really important to keep it really succinct. Clarity is kindness. If you can be clear and concise, you're doing a great service to your crowd. And so if you can keep those intro really simple and clean. Now, part of that is the more you rehearse it, the more you'll understand it, the more concise you can be. And if you don't know the game, you'll start to ramble. So know the game so you can explain it in two sentences and then move on.
Yep.
That's great.
Really good.
So talking about games, I just wanted to kind of go around here, if we will. I want your all-time favorite game that like kills every time when you're in front of kids in your ministry, whatever. I'll start because it's a game you guys created. It's called One Arm, Two Arm, None. And it's a crowd participatory game. Everybody plays and you raised either one arm, two arm, none. And then the video goes and it chooses one. If you got it right, you stay in the game. If you didn't, you sit down. You play that. I've seen that game played for 15 years. It's at least a decade.
Yeah.
Everywhere I go and see that game kills. The kids absolutely love it. So I would say that is my all-time favorite game. Kellen, why don't you go?
To back that up, yes, last 4 years of Camp Kid Jam, you put that on the screen, kids go wild, and it could be their fifth year at camp, and it's like I love it. So whoever came up with that one, I'm going to give that to Brian.
Brian gets that one. Okay.
My all-time favorite game, you put me on the spot.
Yeah.
I think all-time favorite game, if I were freeze tag. If you have space, and you have the environment, freeze tag always wins, especially if, like you guys said, you give them a marker where, like, if you're frozen, you have to sit down.
Yeah.
If you're frozen, you have to sit down. It gives them a marker.
Okay.
And it gives a time frame. You're like, hey, we got 3 minutes.
Yep.
Or we have 1 minute, whatever it is. Kids go crazy. That one works for us.
That seems like a nightmare to me.
I'm
going to be honest with you.
Our school area, we have an outside, so we can easily go outside.
Okay, you go outside, you got that. All right, Gina, coming to you.
Gorilla Man Gun just seems to be a consistent winner each time.
So rock, paper, scissors with your body.
But it's Gorilla Man Gun.
Gorilla Man Gun, okay. Yeah. Rock, paper, scissors.
So, however, I just saw Head, Shoulders, Knees, and Cup a couple of weeks ago, and that was fun. I want to see that again.
Head, shoulders, knees.
Knees and cup. You got a red solo cup, two people pair off, head, shoulders, knees, grab the cup. Whoever grabs the cup wins that round and you keep moving. So it's a lot like Gorilla Man Gun.
There you go. Okay.
Rock, paper, scissors.
Got it. All right. Brad, all-time favorite?
Oh, man, that's a tough one. I'm going to have to go with Flappy Crowd. It's kind of an older game for us. It's a noise controlled. And for me, it's magical because whenever the crowd cheers, the bird goes up and it's just a collection game. It is video driven. I am self-serving. I'm selling my own stuff here, but I just love that game. It's just so much fun to play.
I'll sell it with you. We used it for a youth event we did 2 months ago and the kids never seen it before and they freaked out. They thought it was the magic. Like, how is that? How is that happening?
Yeah. That's awesome.
Like, it's, well, it's the magicalness of that freaks the cat. They're like, is that real? Is that not real? And it's just, yeah, I love that.
That's fun. All right, Brian.
Oh man, do I have to say just one? There's so many. Mm-hmm. Can I do them in different genres? Because I got a couple different, like, you know, depending on your situation, right?
I say all freestyle. Right. So, yeah, like, you go for it.
That's right.
Okay, okay. So I'd say, like, if you're having a big, like, family night, you know, a big group, like, up front, like, a night kind of thing, family feud, or the feud, you know, gotta be careful. That kills every single time I've ever played. I've never played that game, and the audience didn't just say, that was the most fun evening we've had in a long time. So I really like that game. If we're just doing a really quick, I just got it, you know, something I was going to say warm to them, and I'm speaking to it, I would go with, like, The Eliminator is one that just, oh my gosh, I get 8 people up on the stage and they're just saying silly things, and The Eliminator always does well with a large group. Definitely, I've done it with younger kids, but middle school and high school, it kills. If you're in a big gym and you're just running around, Tusker Monster is a great one. It's just, if you've never played it, it's like a game of, it's like tags, but you've got 2 people start off and they've got pool noodles on the end. And whenever they hit someone, they add them to the Tusker Monster, and it just continues to grow until it's just one kid standing.
That's so great. Fun.
It's so good. And then kind of like Girl Man Gun is Rock, Paper, Scissors, Dragon. If you've never played that one, it's you play Rock, Paper, Scissors, and if you beat that person, they join on to the back of you and you make this long dragon. So by the end of the game, you've got 2 huge long lines of kids playing, and then the 2 heads of the dragon are the ones that fight each time. And so fight to these lines, just last 2.
That's awesome.
It's kind of similar to Rock, Paper, Scissors. Oh, Brad, what's the one where everyone like cheers for you? What do they call that?
It's Rock, Paper, Scissors, but with your name. And so like everyone starts off on Rock, Paper, Scissors, and then as soon as you win, then that person becomes your cheering squad and they follow you around. Yeah, so they become your hype man. So by the end, and it's great for it when you're just meeting kids. Whenever we do mission trips, we always do that our first one because it's a great way to get to know people's names as well. So like if me and Mike play and Mike wins and I'm Paul Michael, I'm going, Mike, Mike, Mike. And then the other side's chanting the other person's name. And then that just keeps growing and growing. And by the end, you've got these 2 just big hype, the big, you know, Rock, Paper, Scissors hype, I think is what we should call it. But yeah, it's fantastic. Super easy to play. And it's just you can play it in a parking lot. You can play it up front. You can play it anywhere. It's super, super great game.
Love that. All great ideas. Love
I wrote
it.
Those down.
That except for freeze tag. I'm not sure about freeze tag. I'm just going
to be honest. You come over to my church, play some freeze tag with our kids. You'll love it.
Maybe you've been hosting it wrong.
Maybe that's it. No, not Kelly. Kellen.
They got my back.
Thanks there you go. All right. Well, for all these game ideas, the ones particularly, if you want to know more about what Brad and Brian create, they do some amazing stuff. You can go to crowdcontrolgames.com. It's crowdcontrolgames.com. And you can find Flappy Crowd. You can find One Arm, Two Arm, None. If you've done Jingle Jam, our Christmas event experience, all the games that have been in there have come from Brad and Brian. So they do an amazing job. And thanks for the games that you create that help ministries and cruise ships, apparently, too. So that's great. And and thanks for being on the podcast today. It was a fun interview, for sure.
Hey, thanks for having us. This was a lot of fun.
This is awesome. Great.
Thanks so much.
Great. Well, thank you for listening to our podcast today. And if you've liked what you've heard and you want to hear more, make sure you subscribe to our podcast. And while you're there, if you would, leave us a rating and review because it helps get the word out. And if you have a friend who came to mind as you were listening to this episode about fun who needs to hear this episode, make sure that you send them to our website at orangekidmin.com. All right. Well, Kellen, this has been a fun episode. And Brad and Brian, we always end our episodes with a little special ditty from Kellen. So we're going to kick it to Kellen right now. Take it away, bud.
We've been talking about lots of fun. We've been talking about games. Have lots of fun with all your kids and make sure they're not lame.
Oh.
Kidmin Podcast.
Wow.
That was
impressive.
That was genius.
Thank you.
All right. Well, until next time, thank you so much for listening. Take care.